Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That's fucking minging, that.
I tell you what, David, it's fucking men against fucking boys all over the fucking park. They're fucking weak as piss, they are. Fucking weak as...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sonic Mutsu Kitchen. It's Gav, and you join us after an action-packed weekend where Sunderland started off surprising the world by winning the game of football and then somehow managing to get battered by Blackburn, who've won 1-18, now have won 2-19. Of course, they played Sunderland. We managed to play everybody back into form. And here to help me talk about everything and sum up the mood of the fan base is Craig, who hasn't been on in a while. We only get him out of his box when there's not much nice to talk about. We never just get him out after a win or a run of wins. We prod Craig after big defeats. And here he is. Hello, mate.
Well, I was here last season for the 5-1 defeat to Stoke. I'm here this season for the 5-1 defeat to Blackburn. So just, you know, book me in next season for the next 5-1 defeat and... we'll talk all high-performance-related Sunderland stuff.
Aye. We briefly talked about what we were going to talk about when right before we hit record, and I said, well, to be honest, I don't really want to go in-depth on this game. Let's just talk about how we feel, because, I mean, deflated is probably the big word I would go with. Deflated for me. Not massively pissed off, because I kind of felt like it was inevitable in a way. I saw that start about Blackburn winning 1-18, and straight away I was like, right, we're getting beat today. I mean, I didn't expect a 5-1, but the fact you can kind of telegraph these things is just irritating, isn't it? Like, you knew that as soon as a team, like Blackburn turn up, they're in terrible form, potentially going down, you can guarantee we'll play a team like that back into form. And we don't, like, 5-1, I think it flattered us in many ways. It could have been worse. We were atrocious. Worst performance of the season by a mile. And we've had a few bad ones. I mean, this is the 19th defeat, I think, of the season. We've had some bad performances, but, I mean, this might be the worst of the lot. It was atrocious. And when you hear Mike Dodds come out after the game and Luke O'Neill obviously come out after the game and effectively kind of pin all the blame on the players and say that we need to look at ourselves and there's players who maybe didn't put in the effort required, I think that really sums up where we're at right now, doesn't it? Because we're looking at the rest of the season. We've got 6 games left. We can't do anything in terms of getting promoted or finishing anywhere near the playoffs at this stage. I think relegation's out of the question because, you know, the teams down there really are bad and it would take a big swing for us to get dragged into that mess. But we're in a bit of a state at the minute, not just because we've got nothing to play for in terms of positivity, but off the pitch, it's a mess. We've got no manager. We've got players who we know are probably going to leave, still playing for us. We've got holes in the squad which need to be addressed. There's question marks over where we go from here, where the squad goes from here. And whilst there was that brief glimmer of hope on Friday, I think of the results we've had over Easter, this one summed us up more than anything because it was terrible.
Yeah, I think terrible is probably the apt word, really, isn't it? It's from my perspective, this is probably an indicator of what I think we will become next season. I think it will be a continuation of this when we do lose some of the big players. And look, whilst it's admirable for the likes of Luke O'Neill to come out and sort of take accountability and talk about this level of performance, the fact that it's happened multiple times this season, maybe not to this extent, but with, you know, being beaten 3-0, 4-0 at the Stadium of Light, and like you say, 19 defeats already, having only lost 13 last season, like it's absolutely disgraceful, to be honest. And look, we can point the fingers at the players, we can point the fingers at Mike Dodds on the touchline. I think the reality is the people, the decision makers in charge of the football club, have pretty much got every decision wrong that they have made since last summer, perhaps even longer. And now we're just bearing fruit, really, of all of that. And it's come to a head. So, you know, if, like you say, you're deflated, seeing quite a few angry people in the ground today, people starting to vent the frustrations with one another. It was the first time that I heard chance for Christian Speakman to leave the club. And I think if this does continue, that's it's just going to spiral out of control. It's you mentioned, obviously, the win the other day. I thought we were excellent at Cardiff. I thought that's the real annoyance, isn't it? Is that you turn in a performance of that quality against a team who are above us in the league and you think, right, use that as the benchmark now. We've got to kick on from here. And again, we're just lapsed to what we've seen pretty much throughout the course of the past few months. It's not good enough. There's a lot of players in that side who are underperforming. There's a lot of players who aren't good enough. And I mean, by Christ, I'm just worried now, because I genuinely think the longer this continues, the lack of direction and just the mess behind the scenes, I think we've got a real rocky period ahead of us.
Yeah, well, I stuck a tweet up on the account just asking people what they think. Basically, I said we were going to record. Has anyone got anything to say? And there's a lot of replies, and a majority of them are about the managerial situation, about Mike Dodds, about maybe needing to make a change sooner rather than later. I was listening to Total Sport after the game on the radio, and that was basically the theme of every conversation, of every person calling in. It's the topic on everyone's lips, and it's something that Chris has said repeatedly recently, is that in making that decision to remove Michael Beale and then put Mike Dodds in charge and effectively say we're not going to appoint anyone until the end of the season, all it's done is led to this. It's led to the uncertainty. Everybody's up in the air, not just the players, but the fans. Nobody really knows where we're going. I mean, you look at the form under Mike Dodds, and like it's sacking territory if he was a manager and he'd had that run of results and then ended off with a 5-1 home defeat, you'd be talking about sacking him.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the minute, we're looking at Mike Dodds, and I honestly feel a little bit sorry for him in that I don't think they should have put him in this position. But I think he wanted to be in this position. I genuinely think he's got, maybe it's changed over recent weeks, but I think he's got or had aspirations to be that manager eventually. And I think that they've possibly looked at him that way and said, you know, eventually he could do that job. And it's been terrible under him. Like, going out with it, I know he's well-respected, I know the players like him, but this hasn't done him any favours. If anything, this has made him dispensable, hasn't it? It's shown that, for me, and I've said this repeatedly, this club needs to be looking at next season getting promoted. And I just think that everything we've seen recently points to maybe needing to have a complete clean out of coaching staff, and, you know, bringing in a new head coach, but also freshening things up behind the scenes. Because what seems clear to me is that this current setup it's not working. It's not fresh.
Yeah. I mean, look, Michael Beale was sacked, 6 weeks ago or so? And I think, you know, the middle of February, you're sending a message out to the fans when Christian Speakman used the quote, we're going to plod along from here. I think just kind of writing the season off there was a pretty disgusting thing to do, to be honest, for a club of our size, considering he was the one who sat in the chair and said that we weren't satisfied with the playoffs, to then subsequently lead us into where we are now, looking over our shoulders, bottom half the table. Like I say, it's just been an absolute mess. And look, I think in terms of, you know, Dodds, a respectable guy, he seems like a really nice bloke, but, and I say this as nice as I can, like he's just not good enough at all. And it's the same with Proctor. Again, look, Michael Proctor, in terms of the pair of them, it's going to prevent basically somebody from coming in and taking charge, I believe. Because subsequently, if you are looking at a successor here, my number one choice is Steve Cooper. But if we tell Steve Cooper that he can't bring in his number two because he has to work with these two, then straight away it's going to leave him as a sole voice, and it's going to be restrictive. And I'm not so much a fan of that. I like having continuity and a sense of direction, and I don't really mind keeping them around the club, but I think they need to take a step back and maybe have different roles within the academy. If they are, you know, training the lads during the week, so be it. That's absolutely fine. But I think even in terms of how we're playing as a club at the moment, they aren't demonstrating, in my opinion, that they should really be kept on. But like I say, we're talking again about sort of hiring and firing people, you know, further down the chain. For me, again, we've got to look solely, really, at what's going on higher up. I'm chewing on my words here because, I'm just that pissed off with it all. You know, we're talking about a 5-1 defeat at home again today to a team who's lost 1-18 games. I just do not think it's acceptable. And the fans are so disjointed at the moment. Just the atmosphere today, it was horrendous. And I don't mean that in terms of, you know, basically poor because nobody was singing, but you just looked around and everybody was so dejected. And that translates to the pitch, and it translates to the touchline. And what this football club now needs, a real shot in the arm. And I think if you are looking at the likes of Speakman, he's put his friend in charge. And the reality is, I'll use the word allegedly here, just so, you know, we don't get into any hot water. We know who picks the team. We know who basically dictates who has to have the minutes because they want to sell them on at a higher value longer down the line. Tony Mowbray basically spelled that out for everybody and lost his job the next day. What he needs to do now is he needs to, in my opinion, take accountability for the mess that he's left us in. He needs to go out and he needs to bring in a proper manager who we're all going to get behind, and it needs to be a statement. Like you said, we have to be aiming for better than we are now, because what they've done this season, they've sucked the soul out of the football club. They've sucked the life out of all of us fans. I personally feel going to the stadium right now, like it's very similar to the 17-18 season, where you're just turning up because it's compulsory, because we have to, because we feel obligated to do it.
There was a feeling of that today, definitely.
It's just apathy.
I felt like that today. When we were conceding goals today, I didn't feel angry at all. I was just, kind of laughing at it, actually. I was like looking around, and a lot of people were the same as me. They weren't like jumping out of seats to go down the throats of the players. There was obviously people doing that, but not to the extent you would expect. I think people have turned up today and turned up in recent weeks, and because they know we've got nothing to play for, it's kind of like, oh well, you know, it is what it is. And it you're right, it's kind of sucked the life out of people, because I mean, we should have been at this stage of the season. We should have had things to play for. We should still be playing for playoffs, and we're not. And I think that's probably what hurts more than anything. You know, you go all the way back to the root of what led us to this point, really, was the sacking of Tony Mowbray and making a gamble in appointing Michael Beale and not doing what they're probably going to have to do this summer and get it bob on. Like, appoint somebody who makes sense. And they didn't do that when they appointed Beale, and obviously what followed, and we're in this mess now. But it all stemmed from sacking Mowbray, which I agreed with, and I said at the time I could understand the reasons for doing it. But with the benefit of hindsight, had I known it was going to go this way, I would never have wanted to say the back of him, because it's just been one bad decision after another. It's been terrible, and they're going to have to flex this summer, not just with the appointment of the manager, but with the way they recruit players. And I read the minutes from the meeting, the supporters collective meeting, which came out through the week. And there were points on that. They said that they would flex. They said that they recognised experience was an issue. I think the fact that Mike Dodds has came out, and we know he's the voice of the football inside of the organisation, you know, as it is at the minute. And we know he's got a line to Speakman. And even he's came out and said it. So I do think they'll have recognised that this team has chronically lacked when it comes to experience. And I've said this a lot recently. All this has done, all of this mess since basically the turn of the year has done, is put serious pressure on the summer. Because now everything's going to be scrutinised to the nth degree.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to get everything spot on. The appointment of the manager has got to be a statement, as you've said, because it sets the tone for everything which follows. Like, we're in a position now where we know we've got players who are valuable, and clubs higher up the food chain would want them if the price was right. We've gone from being a really attractive football team who play nice football, who stand for something, have an identity. where you can see the upward trajectory of the team. We've gone from that to a mess. We're just another championship team. And those players who've got value, they may well be looking at this summer and thinking, I might be off here, like, I might as well go. And I don't know if you, I mean, I haven't heard it myself, but Mike Dodds' interview with BBC Newcastle after the game, apparently he was talking about how he went in the changing room and had pointed out, like, if you want to play for Sunderland, then that's not acceptable. I think Luke O'Neill came out after the game and hinted at, you know, questionable attitude from some of his teammates. Like, we could be in the midst of that right now. This could be a problem right now where we've got, you know, people are talking about Jack Clark leaving the club. He might not be the only one. There might be others there who want to go. And it's going to make this summer just so much more important than it ever needed to be. Because had we just coasted, bobbed around the playoffs, kept playing nice football, basically did what we did in the first half of the season, but right up until the end of the season, I think most people would have taken that and then they would have went into the summer looking more optimistically. Now it's like serious pressure, isn't it, on everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, in respect of obviously calling the players out, I'll be honest, I'm not really a fan of that, especially the fact that they're so young as well. And I really do have a huge amount of sympathy for some of these lads because, look, we've got to be honest, there's an awful lot of the signings that we've brought in over the course of the past three windows. The players just aren't good enough and they've had chance to sort of demonstrate what they can do. And we haven't really seen anything sort of in any shape of success. And look, we'll keep our lips sealed in respect of where we've heard it from. But we've both heard firsthand that some of the players that they've brought in, the coaches don't even rate. We've both heard that. We've both heard that from very, very good sources that some of the players that they brought in, they do not think is good enough. So what I suppose I would, you know, then kind of put this question back to you. Do you have, considering, you know, the previous managerial appointment and the, I would say, three consecutive bad windows, do you have any confidence in Speakman and the rest of the decision makers basically fixing the mess that they've created this summer? Because I've got to be honest, Gavin, I don't think it's too reactive or passionate to say it, but when we can see things go bad, because by Christ, look, we've seen a lot of, you know, bad Sunderland sides and we know how quickly things can change. I think the current trajectory that we're on, we're going to be in a relegation battle next season unless things really do improve. Because like you say, we've got some tremendous players and you take Jack Clark out of our team and already you're looking over your shoulder thinking we're a relegation candidate. We're struggling to break teams down. We're struggling to beat teams. Fairly fortunate maybe the other day that we caught Cardiff on an off day. But by Christ, some of the teams who are coming and bullying us, you've only got to look at their form. I mean, you talk about Blackburn, one win in 18. And today they turned up, barely broke a sweat and left and just saw. I mean, I don't know if they'd be surprised by it, but by Christ, if a neutral watched that today, they would have thought we were divisions apart. And that is an absolute just shocking state of where we are. It's a prerequisite, really, for any Sunderland player to get on that pitch and give 110%. Maybe some players aren't doing that.
There was a bunch of them when I've watched it back. There's a bunch of them just looked out on their feet at times, like lads. You would normally, I mean, I've never seen. I know Luke O'Neill isn't everyone's favourite, but I've never seen him make that many mistakes. Trey Hume was nowhere near, who's always generally pretty dependable. Starting Patrick Roberts, who isn't fit.
He got absolutely slated, and I'll. The thing is with Patrick Roberts, probably by his own admission, he hasn't had a very productive season. Obviously, no goals, one assist. But, you know, we chucked him in and it shouldn't have happened. That was a disgraceful decision, basically, from whoever decided he was ready to go. He was nowhere near. And I felt sorry for him because they ganged up on him. Everything came down that side and they exploited straight away. And they should have probably hauled him off at halftime and said, look, that's our mistake, not yours. But I think, like, just kind of going back to maybe if some players are not giving us 100%, again, does that perhaps go back to February when Christian Speakman says we're going to continue with obviously with Dodds, with Proctor, and we're just going to plod along? He effectively chucked the season away at that point when there was still a lot to play for. And you can kind of understand if players are now going through the motions thinking, well, look, I'm going to have a move in the summer. Ultimately, that sense of direction came from those up above. So, like I say, I'm not going to be too critical over the players because, like I say, I think the full mess still stems much further up.
Well, it goes, I guess, there's a lot we can fairly criticise Christian Speakman for, but it goes even further up than that, really. You know, his boss is the owner, Kirill, and Juan Satori. They set the agenda, they set the budget, they, you know, ultimately set what they want the football club to look like, or at least represent, and they appoint people to carry out what they want the football club to do and act like and play like and conduct themselves like that. That's ultimately, the buck stops with the guy at the very top. It always has done. Doesn't matter who the owner is. It's always stopped with the owner. And I guess that's where I've had sympathy for Speakman, in that ultimately he's working with what he's got. We don't know, you know, how much of what we've seen in terms of direction comes from him or comes from the owners. We don't know. I mean, you said before, do I trust him to carry out that summer rebuild? Yes and no. I mean, it's been a stinker this year in terms of recruitment. Yeah. When we signed a lot of these players, and we went through this the other week, you know, on here. Like I was going through the strikers we signed. When you read like on paper where they came from, what we were being told about them when they came in, they weren't experienced forwards, but they sounded like pretty exciting options, and we didn't know really what was going to go on with them. I mean, I didn't expect Mason Burstow to be this bad, for instance, considering he was getting Premier League minutes in August and starting in the Cup for Chelsea. You know, you're looking at that and you think, well, he must be Championship standard, and he's not. So there's been a lot of that where I think they've brought in players who just haven't worked out for whatever reason. But I would point more so, not to the summer, but to January, because you look at Styles, you look at Hjelder, who came in. Mundell, I think, might be a good player in time. I'm not convinced on the other two. Definitely not with Styles. He's nowhere near good enough. And I wonder what the thought was there with signing those players. Was it just a case of, we need cover till the summer, this lad will do? Because we didn't sign anybody in January who was there to make a difference, ultimately. We needed difference makers, and we didn't bring any in whatsoever. I know we were in the market for Kiefer Moore. Ipswich outspent us. And even then, had we matched Ipswich, I still think they would have got him, given where they were in the table, he's already played for them before. You know, there's a couple of Welsh players in their team who he's probably familiar with from the national side. But we'll never know. Ultimately, what I'm saying is that we didn't push the boat out in January to get players which might have made a difference. And then you mentioned in February, Speakman effectively wrote the season off. I remember listening, it was a while ago, I can't remember where I heard it, might have been on TalkSport or something, but Dara McAnthony, the Peterborough chairman, said something about, I think he was actually talking about somebody Sunderland had sacked. It was one of the many managerial changes we've made in recent years. And I think he said something along the lines of, when you sack a manager mid-season, what you're effectively telling everybody, the players, the club, the fans, everybody, is that you're writing the season off. Because the plan that you set out with in the summer, that's not gone to plan. And you're basically saying, right, well, we're going to stop this dead now, and we're going to start from scratch again. So you're telling everybody basically that, you know, your season's over with, your plan's not worked. And we've been in that position twice this season. So it shouldn't surprise anybody that we've ended up where we've ended up. And I think there will be an inquest in the summer, but I'm not convinced that we're going to get this like outpouring of sort of, well, we're not going to have Speakman coming out on a podcast and sitting down saying, look, I've bollocked it up. I've done this wrong. I've done that wrong. We've done this wrong. We've done that wrong. And we need to put it right. I'm not convinced you're going to get that level of honesty. And that's maybe not what people want to hear, but that's not what you're going to get. And I think this summer is going to be more about, it has to be more about actions, not words. Like, we just need to see, things we can actually measure success by. I don't want to hear platitudes. I don't want them paying lip service effectively. I just want to see them doing things which make a lot of sense, that makes sense if you're a team going for promotion, which is what we need to be, ultimately. Like, whatever's happened now, it's happened. This season's been shit. But in the summer, the reset button will have to be hit, as it's hit for everybody. And I look at that championship next season. I look at what's coming down. I look at the teams who are probably going to go up. I still think, despite all of this sort of uncertainty, negativity we're all feeling right now, I still think next season the championship's up for grabs if we really want it. And everything they do has got to represent that in terms of who they appoint, who they bring in, how much this model flexes. Like, you'll be able to tell by the players they sign, right? But if we go out and we look at the free agent market, the players that sort of go out of contract at the end of the season, if we look at that free agent market and we go out and get like three or four quality experienced players, like players over the age of 27, 28, who can really add something and we can get a good 2 or 3 years from. In the same, I guess in the same way that we have with some of the more experienced players we've got right now, you know, you can get 2 or 3 good years out of them, but they're a level above what we've got, the Premier League, bottom end Premier League standard maybe. If we go out and do that right off the bat, that sends a message straight away, doesn't it? It tells everyone, look, we are changing. We're serious about promotion. And then everything from there should make sense afterwards. So it ultimately what I'm saying is it all stems from that managerial appointment, doesn't it? And I actually think when you talk about trust, just to go back, this is a very long-winded answer, but when you talk about trust before and whether I trust them to make the decisions, other than the Beal appointment, I actually think they've made a lot of sense, the appointments they've made in terms of what we needed at the time. The Beal one definitely did not. It was a complete balls up. And the decision not to replace him so far to date has been a balls up. But I take a little bit of heart from the fact when they appointed Johnson, he did what he needed to do. We replaced him. We brought in somebody who got us promoted. When it didn't work out with Neil, we brought in somebody to stabilise us. Those appointments, whilst at the time people questioned them, like nobody, I think, really wanted Tony Mowbray. Nobody was too keen on Alex Neil, Lee Johnson. Yeah. But those appointments in time made sense. So I kind of do trust them in a way, but like I keep saying, there's a lot of pressure on that decision, isn't there? Because like, if they fuck up the next managerial appointment, if we have a stinker in the transfer market, I mean, they're not going to have a leg to stand on ultimately.
No, and I think at the moment, any remaining sort of patience fans might have or any confidence, it is based on them dining out on, you know, successes going back 2 years ago or so. I remember when they appointed Mowbray, obviously, there was the article that done the rounds to suggest that they'd looked at some sort of managerial database where they had 10,000 candidates or something like that on. Sure, somebody can source that. But ultimately, the answer it gave was that Tony Mowbray was the best man. And look, Tony Mowbray had done an outstanding job here, all things considered. But it has to be of that level, the next appointment, I think. And it has to be somebody, ultimately, who is going to take us to the Premier League. Because
what do you think of Paul Heckenbottom, by the way? Just to stop your mid-point there, because that's a name that came up this week.
Not my number one choice. My number one choice would be Steve Cooper. I think Steve Cooper will have Premier League interest. And I also think he'd probably want a more hands-on approach. And I think he'd want to have more sort of influence into what goes on in terms of incomings and recruits. Heckenbottom would seem to be a sensible one. He's got a, you know, decent track record recently of obviously getting Sheffield United out of the Championship, finishing second. And look, granted, people are going to refer to the early months of Sheffield United this season in the Premier League, but look, they were heavily hamstrung by a lot of issues off the field. I think they had a transfer embargo, then obviously they sold a lot of players as well. And to be fair, I think, you know, you look at all the teams who have actually gone up this season, not one of them have been really good enough. Luton, perhaps the best. And I think that's just because of their approach to it. They're a little old-fashioned in that sense with the way they play. But even if we'd snuck up through the playoffs last season, or even Coventry, I think we all would have had similar seasons. So Heckenbottom can maybe a little unfortunate that he lost his job because they replaced him with Chris Wilder. And to be fair, he hasn't really done much better. They haven't had more fight or anything like that. They still ultimately look short and just not good enough. Very reminiscent of us in the 15-point season, or even the 19-point season. I think it would make sense. I think if you asked us to put money on it now, I think he will likely be the Sunderland manager next season. And that's not just because he's the available option at the moment. I think we will likely interview a fair few candidates. Will still keeps getting his name mentioned. And I'll be honest, he's just not for me.
Nah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah. I think back, look, I'm 35. I think back of all the semi-successful managers we've had in charge of Sunderland. They've all had bit of a character about them. They've all, you know, had that something about them, and I just do not think Will still does. His track record okay for managing Ream, it's all right. But I think if nobody knew about the Football Manager sort of stuff, if he wasn't such a social media sensation, nobody would be suggesting him. And I think that is why he's obviously his name is banded about a bit more. If you asked us now, like I say, I think it'll be Heckenbottom. I want Cooper. I guess we'll wait and see. Like I say, they have to make they've got to really make a big statement this summer.
Would Heckenbottom or Cooper be a big statement?
I think so.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think obviously
managers with recent promotions on the CV. I don't know what it is though. They're not glamorous names. That's the other thing, is it? But like I pointed out before, with Mowbray and Neil and things, they weren't either.
No.
And they did what we wanted them to do when they came in.
Yeah, I think with Cooper, obviously, got Swansea to the playoff semi-final in his final season there in charge. Obviously, he took Forest pretty much from the bottom all the way to the playoffs and got them up. And like I say,
they still love him as well at Forest, don't they?
Yeah, and again, if you look at, obviously, his demise at his time, he didn't want all those players. 35 players or something they signed last season. I'm sure I read something somewhere that suggested he didn't even know half of them, you know, were actually available, and they just kind of turned up once, obviously, people above him had signed them.
And he kept them up. He kept them up even despite all of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And like I say, I think he has that something about him. And ultimately, that's what we're lacking at the moment. And look, I'm not going to lay into people's personalities, but Mike Dodds and Michael Beale does not scream who should be on the touchline of our club. And again, it can go back to the whole, you know, people are laughing, it's the whole sort of cliche thing, but think of, you know, when we've had Peter Reid or Allardyce or Roy Keane or even Alex Neil, stuff like that, they're all fearless and they're all represented basically what we want as a football club and what our fan base wants. They had that sort of desire and the no-nonsense attitude. And Christ, I think even Mowbray, you know, he was really calm and collective and very relaxed. He maybe wasn't as fiery as, say, Alex Neil in his press conferences and things like that. But, you know, he still understood the football club. And I think that's where we've gone astray, is because we have a lot of people at the moment who don't fully get us. They can't fully maybe acknowledge the mistakes that's being made. And look, go to the off-field stuff, the whole debacle of the Black Cats Bar and stuff like that. They will never fully understand the damage that has done. And it's the same now. They basically need to get their heads out of the sand, and they really need to kick us on in the right direction, because, as I was about to mention a minute ago, the attendance today, obviously, you know, it was met with jeers and people laughing. They said 42,000. 42,000 tickets sold, obviously, as we know. The thing is, there's a lot of people who have season tickets, or they might have tickets every single week, and they don't go for a variety of reasons. That's their prerogative, no problem at all. That being said, if it gets to a point where they start to make that decision to say, look, I've made a few home games, I've missed a few home games, what if they just wrap it in? How many fans?
I've got a couple of mates in that situation right now.
How many are you going to lose?
Haven't been able to go to a few of the recent games, and prices have gone up, and, you know, maybe their shifts are changing at work, or, you know, circumstances are changing at home, you know, having kids or whatever, and they're just like, Whereas last year, because it was that good to watch, people were like, Christ, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. They're now giving people like that who generally don't need to have a season card to be a Sunderland fan, they can get by just going to the odd game, watching the streams at home or whatever. They're giving those fans the decision to make now. I don't think the price increases have got much to do with it, because it's not a great increase, really. I think it's more to do with what we're seeing on the pitch, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think considering they set the benchmark at the start of the season to basically say that no one's satisfied with getting into the playoffs, that we've got to keep improvement, and obviously they were targeting the top two. I know that's been reflected heavily on, and people have said that they didn't put a time scale on or anything like that, but they still very much alluded to this season being the season that we're going to strive to kick on. And look, it was fairly fortunate the way all the cards fell in our favour last season for the final few games to get into the top six, but we still got there. And we should have really used that again as the next stepping stone. But I feel like we've just chucked it all away. I really do, honestly. The mood around the players at the minute, it's absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There's no dressing it up. It's been shit for the longest time now. It feels like forever. That win at Cardiff on Friday was a sort of brief respite from what's just been misery for, well, we're into April now. It's been all year, hasn't it, really?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much as soon as we sacked Mowbray, even before Mowbray was sacked, because the football leading up, that was terrible. I did see it earlier, but the stat on sort of how many points we've collected since, I think it was since Beale was appointed, it's relegation form, like, it's horrendous. We're lucky we had a decent start of the season where we picked up a lot of points, because otherwise we'd be down there and struggling. And as we've said repeatedly today, they've got to get it right in the summer. And we've got six games left. We've done a great job of avoiding talking about this Blackburn game, by the way. Me and Martin did that the other week when we were on. We managed to just not talk about losing to QPR. But, like, we've got six games left. And it's like, oh, I'm just dying for it to end. Put us out of our misery. Just finish the season. Get it over with. Because I'm dying for us to just have that summer where we can... We all know what we need. The club know what we need now. I think it's been made apparent with the form recently and the way things have gone. They'll be as desperate as we are to get to the summer. I think that much is clear. The big question mark ultimately right now is, do we get ahead of ourselves? Let's say Paul Heckenbottom is going to be the next summer manager. Let's say they've already spoken to him. That's already lined up. Would you want to get ahead and bring him in sooner to maybe let him have sort of the last month of the season to get to know some of the players, to assess the situation, to see what he's got to work with? Or is it better for everybody that we, because we've written this season off, that he's not tarred with a brush, that this mess, or, you know, that he's not clubbed in with all that shit, and we give him a fresh chance, we give whoever the next manager is a fresh opportunity in the summer? Like, what makes more sense at this stage?
Well, look, there's probably pros and cons of both. I remember when we brought Mick McCarthy in, I think he lost his final, 9-10 games or something of the Premier League season. And ultimately, there wasn't a lot he could do. It wasn't his team. He couldn't bring any players in. He couldn't let any players go at that time. But that being said, he still got to find out who he could potentially keep and basically see who was good enough. So I think if we're fairly confident that he was going to be our manager next season, the advantage he would have, of course, if he comes in and basically takes a look at the squad, you know, he's going to identify what we need to obviously work with and prove who needs to go. But that being said, you know, how many times do you hear from managers? I think Alex Neil, he said that he'd obviously watched some of our games and he'd identified what we needed to do. So ultimately, whoever takes the job, whether it's him or not, they still should be able to sort of identify. They still should have been doing their homework pre-interview to kind of see and know what they're going to work with. Ultimately, I think if I had the decision, I would probably appoint them the day after the season finished. Whoever it is, if we've got somebody lined up, appoint them there and then, and basically say they've got the summer and just kind of kick on from there. Because, like I say, they will be associated perhaps with, you know, a real dismal final six games. And the last thing we want is obviously to put anybody under any undue pressure, obviously ahead of next season. Because like you say, it's going to be a big one. And if you think, look, we've lost 19 games. We lost 23 games in the season we went down under Chris Coleman and Simon Grayson. So we're very close to obviously matching that. And the last thing you would want is anybody straight away to have any association to it. So I wouldn't appoint anyone just yet. I would try and like I say, just get through the remaining games as quick as we can. Try and keep it as respectable as we can. But I unfortunately think we've probably got another six sort of unconvincing performances to go. And I think ultimately now we just need to try and stop this rot somehow, one way or the other. Obviously, the Cardiff game certainly wasn't sufficient to do that. And losing to day 5-1, it's just not acceptable. So, like I say, obviously, whatever direction they need to go in, they just need to make it right. They need to sort it out.
Yeah, well, we've got six games left. I was just looking there. Four of those teams have got things to play for. Leeds going, obviously, for automatic promotion. West Brom going for the playoffs. Millwall relegation battle. Sheffield relegation battle. Watford and Bristol City really are in the same position as us, aren't they? They're kind of milling around with nothing to do. So it should be interesting, but if we play in any of those four games I just mentioned like we did today, then we'll get battered four times. I've got no doubt about it. But Bristol City at home next week, I'm not confident about that. I don't really want to even think about it, so we'll not touch too much on it, but we need a response. I think that's something that it goes without saying, doesn't it? Like, we need a response after this shit show. I mean, yeah. We got a response from what happened before Easter with the win at Cardiff, but then this was just like none of that had happened at Cardiff. And, you know, everyone's already on the beach. We need a response, because if we have another home game where we play badly, I don't know. I kind of see the crowds for the remaining two home games being any good, because why would anybody want to go back and watch that shit?
We just need to finish as strong as we can. I think if you want to look at one very small positive from obviously the horror show that we've just endured is Chris Rigg scoring again. Obviously, I understand maybe why he hasn't played as regular, because he is still a child. But that being said, when he comes into the team, you know, I suppose it counteracts against the argument of experience. He never, ever looks out of place. He is an absolute diamond of a player. Enjoy him while we can, because it's reasonable to suggest that he will have a lot of suitors come this summer. So it will certainly do us well to finish as good as we can, because if all of a sudden, you know, we're right down near the bottom of the table, and then you're trying, obviously, to retain Clark, Ballard, Hume, Dan Neil, Patterson, all these players linked with moves away, you know, it's not going to look too good if, yeah, you're obviously finishing towards the bottom of the pack. And that'll be the same for any new recruits as well. So, like I say, we need to finish as strong as we can and really try and build momentum, because we know the way it works. Momentum with Sunderland, it goes heavily both ways. You lose a few games and then it's a spiral that you can't get out of. Obviously, it goes the other way. We get promoted from League One and we're, what, two games away from the Premier League last season. So it's a funny thing, Sunderland. We're a club like no other. So we really do need to try and stop the rot while we can.
Well, cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us to wallow in this misery this evening. Thanks very much. Martin and Chris have picked a good week off, haven't they?
Bastards.
They've picked a good week to go on holiday.
Packer bastards. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Cheers, mate. Thanks very much.
I'll see you for the next five.
Yeah, one. Yeah. Cheers to the listeners for joining us. If you've made it this far, well done. Well done. I'm sure there's people listening to this are probably even more depressed than we are with what we've seen. So, yeah, we might be back with a preview through the week. It depends if I can be asked to talk about Sunderland again, which is probably unlikely, but we'll see. If not, we'll be back after the Bristol City game. If we're talking about a win, Chris will be on, I promise you. I'll drive to his house and pin him down and force him to do a podcast. If not, because a poor bloke's not been on one for a win for a long, long time. So, yeah, Chris might be back, but we'll see. We'll see. Anyways, thanks, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back at some point in the future, hopefully talking about someone winning the game. But I wouldn't get your hopes up. See you later.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.